Great. It's a pleasure to talk to you, Willie.
Likewise,
Talking
likewise.
to Willie Chambers from the original Mississippi-born Chambers Brothers.
Hey.
You guys brought gospel music to the mainstream.
We were the first. We were the first group to do gospel music in clubs and coffee houses in the 60s, early 70s.
It was a different kind of sound, and I would assume that when you sang with Columbia Records, they were a little bit nervous.
They were totally nervous. I don't think they didn't quite know what to do.
Yeah.
It was a different thing for them because at that point, Columbia was mostly a C&W label, and I think they had Paul Revere and the Raiders was the closest thing to what we were about. And
That wasn't too close at all, actually,
no,
when you
it
think
was
about it.
quite a space, but that was the closest.
Yeah.
Yeah, and but they were ready to try new ideas and new things, so like there we were.
Well, I mean, you can't get anything much newer than Time Has Come Today, which was kind of a mix of gospel and rock and psychedelia and everything else in one song.
Man, I don't know what that song is. I think it's still selling and still playing because people are trying to figure it out. But
Well,
whatever the reason is, no, that was we put that together. We were hoping to have something like the success that it's been.
I don't think you ever could have predicted the kind of success it's had, though.
Huh?
I mean, it's had more success than you ever could have predicted.
Yeah. Well, it's just kind of keeping it going. It's we wanted to do a song. Well, we kind of concentrated a lot on things that would have some kind of substantial sustaining, sustain that was saying something that could be fresh today and tomorrow, and have the same meaning or impact as something for people to think about for years to come and to be able to get something out of it or from it to help them better them. And that one turned out to be all right.
Yeah, I think that the sign that that is an enduring hit is that it keeps getting used in movies, and the most recent being Girl Interrupted with Winona Ryder. I mean, it's been in so many movie soundtracks, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, play it again, Sam.
Ka-ching, 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 right? Now, what did you folks, obviously, your brothers, you guys were all brothers in real life, so you weren't like the righteous brothers, you guys were real brothers.
We were real blood brothers.
Yeah, when did you guys start singing together?
Oh man, we were toddlers. My mom and dad, we would come home out of the fields from working in the fields every day, and she would have what we called supper prepared, and we would eat and wash the dust and dirt off, and then we would sit around the fireplace or whatever, and my mom and dad would start singing songs, and we would all join in, and we had a concert at our house every single day and night. Everybody in my, it was eight boys and five girls, everybody sang, play instruments or something. And we would just sit there and entertain ourselves until it was till everybody started to pass out, and one by one we'd pass out and go to bed and get up and do the same thing the next day. And of course there was a church was a big influence too. We sang in the choirs, and there was plays and stuff like that involved singing and stuff. We always got those parts. And it was like singing was just a part of our lives.
So when was it that you guys crossed over from singing in church and singing in the family to actually realizing that you could make a living from this? Is it when you moved from Mississippi to LA?
Well, by even in Mississippi, when we were very young kids, my mother used to, there was a scripture in the Bible that she used to read to us all the time about, and God passed out talents to people. And it says, take these talents and use them to better yourself. She used to always read that scripture to us. And we kind of always felt like it meant that we could someday support ourselves and our families by singing and playing music. But we didn't really experience, after when we left Mississippi and moved to Los Angeles, California, we were just having fun. We were just doing what we always did and what we enjoyed doing. And so we decided, well, a couple of us had gone through, had had marriages that had failed, and we were now bachelors again, who had two younger brothers that had never experienced marriage. And we were doing day jobs, getting up in the morning, going to work every day, getting nowhere, and trying to be a group at the same time, which is one of the most difficult situations you could ever put yourself in, because your job knock you out of the pocket all the time. there's some place you need to be making a personal appearance, if nothing else, just to be standing there, and you can't go because you got to go to your job. You can't keep a job because sometimes you say, heck, I'm not going to work today. I'm going to this jam. I'm going to be here and I'm going to be there. And you were constantly losing your day job. And we one day we sat down and we were just talking among ourselves and we says, listen, if we're gonna do this thing, we're just gonna have to give up these day jobs. We're gonna have to eat peanuts and drink sodas or whatever it takes to fill our stomachs until we pull it off. And we did just that. We rented a two-story bad house in the Los Angeles area. And that rent was $165 a month. You know how long ago that was. We moved into this big house. And we proceeded to seek a career. And we didn't know quite what side of town to take it to. We went to South Central Los Angeles, and we totally didn't get accepted over there. They just didn't understand the music that we were playing because of our background, where we came from. The kind of music we grew up on was the Grand Ole Opera, country and western. That was the first music I ever heard on radio, was the Grand Ole Opera. And we used to do the country and western songs, and then we later, there was a blues station, and we, with the gospel singing that we'd been doing all our lives, and the country and western and the blues, a mixture of three types of music, which made the Chambers Brothers, and it was misunderstood by some people. And one day, Lightnin' Hopkins came to town, and one of my younger brothers was like conking hair, like back in the days when they had the black guys had the processed hair.
Mm-hmm.
Lightnin' wanted his hair processed, so I had been playing for a blues singer guy named Long Gone Miles, and who was a good friend with Lightnin' Hopkins. They grew up together back in Texas, so he told Lightnin' about my brother, and Lightnin' and a fella came to get my brother to pick up supplies at the beauty supply store to cook Lightning's hair, and my brother and Lightning was talking in the car, and the guy driving the car happened to be Ed Pearl, who was the owner of one of the most popular coffee houses in Hollywood, the Ash Grove. And he turned to my brother and said, "You got a group?" And my brother says, "Yeah, we have a group." And he says, "What kind of group you have?" And he says, "We have a gospel group." "A gospel group? What is that?" So my brother explained to him what gospel music was. He said, "Why don't you come to my club and audition? Maybe the people might like it and you can get a job." So we did just that, and the people, they had never experienced anything like the gospel music, which was a lot of high-energy foot stomping, hand-clapping, high-energy music, and did they ever like it. Man, we were on our way.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. And I had told my brothers, I says, "I don't care what happens, I'm never going to fly on a plane." Do you know, before I realized it, I'd had many flights. Next thing, we were flying all over the place.
That's funny. Now, so the first song that was released, actually, was "Time Has Come Today," right?
Pardon?
Wasn't that your first song that came out, "Time Has Come Today"?
Well, we had a gospel record on SBNW label called "I Trust in God and Just a Little More Faith." That was our very first recording release. And then we later had a release on Vault Records. What was the name of that song now? Call Me.
Mm-hmm.
And then after Vault, it was Columbia.
And that was
we didn't have any real success with those releases.
Yeah. Now, Columbia is huge. And I'll ask you a question I ask a lot of the folks who recorded in the 60s. Did you have a good contract? Is it something that you're still making money off today?
Yeah.
So that's good.
It wasn't the best, but it was good at that point, at that era.
Yeah.
You know, and that in the '60s it was pretty good. It was not bad. It wasn't the greatest, you know, but it was live with.
Yeah. At least you're making something. Some of the folks I talked to from the '50s groups made nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, later years, even into the '70s, people didn't sign the right kind of contract. There's something I always wondered about. I've always believed that little kids, when they first start to school, they should start teaching, you know, it should be taught to kids the business end of entertainment, because that's what's like. And with the average person who play music, sing songs or stuff like that, your concentration is not on business. It's you're thinking song, you're thinking lyrics, you're thinking what would the people like to hear all your life, and the business end of your life is not up to par.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know some parts of the business end, because it's a necessity to know. And like in a lot of situations where young artists came, musicians, singers, what have you, they didn't know the business end, and like there are people out there that just to prey on people who don't know, and you can end up very easily signing your life away without even realizing it.
Mm. It's interesting you note that, because schools like Berklee School of Music and the Boston Conservatory now do incorporate some business courses into their curriculum,
should be in public schools. All schools should be teaching, because there are children there with a little bit of talent, and they have talent potential. You know, have potential to go on someday and be a fine recording artist or what have you.
Mm.
But they don't know, the business end has not been taught to them, and it's just not something that you just automatically can figure out. It's more complicated than that.
Mm.
And people need to be taught that at a very early age. We had a little bit of knowledge about royalties, residuals, mechanicals, and what have you. Because we met an older person that was once a songwriter, and he had some bad luck. Somebody ripped him off for his very first successful song, which was Tequila. He was a piano player, and he was sitting in the basement bar basement of a hotel on Central Avenue, and there was a piano there, and he was sitting there. He was playing da 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 da. Well, there was a group recording down the street, and they had taken a break. The producer was taking a walk. He passed that bar, and he heard that melody coming out through the window. He went back to the studio, and he says, "I just heard something down the street. You know, it sounds like this." And he hummed it off a little bit. Well, they didn't have lyrics, so they just played the music, and there was a pause, and they said, "Tequila."
Yeah.
And they would continue, and it was a smashing hit. And, you know, this guy, he's totally unknown today. He died a few years ago, still unknown. He was the guy who was composing that music that got swiped away from him. It ruined his life. I kept telling him, I says, you got that one came out of you. There's another one in there someplace. And he ended up being a total alcoholic. He just drank his life away because he was grieving about that one. He spent a lifetime trying to write one good song, and he came up with a melody, and before he could even finish it, he hears it on the radio, and it just broke his heart. But he could never get over that. Later years, he did write some more songs, and he wrote one song called "I'm So Tired," and my brothers and I, we recorded that on the Columbia label for him.
Mm.
That song that he had written.
Yeah, Tequila was number one for 5 weeks with the Champs doing that song.
Yeah, Tequila.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can imagine what it did to him.
Ugh.
It drove him nuts. I mean, he just ruined his life. And, you know, says, "Hey, if you got one, you can come with another." He says, "That was my first one," and he says, "And I got to hear it on the radio, and people don't even know who I am."
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of sad. That's a sad story. But on a happy story, the Chambers Brothers did incredibly well in 1968. You guys hit the top 40 twice. Time has come today, and I can't turn you loose. You had a great career. I want to know a little bit about what happened to all the original Chamber Brothers. I know that you and Joe have been touring for years. I'm not sure if you're touring with him now or by yourself at this point. But
I'm solo now. I've been solo for a couple of years or more now.
So what happened to the other brothers?
Just simply retired out of it. We had traveled 21 years and a half without a break, and that's a lot of travel. You know, it's for entertainment. That's not a long time to travel, but it's the intensity of it. You travel every day. You fly to a different city every day, and after 21 years and a half, you start waking up and you can't figure out where you are. You walk outside, you can't, you look around, you don't know where you are on this planet, what town, what city am I in, you don't know.
Mm.
And it happened to my two younger brothers a couple of maybe three times. It only happened to me once, and we were in Massachusetts. I got up one morning, I had been married here in Los Angeles, and we had three kids. And it was a Sunday morning, I woke up in my hotel room, I thought I was in Los Angeles. I got up and I got dressed. I said, I'm going to pick my kids up today and we're going to go to church. And I got dressed and I walked outside and I didn't know where I was. And then I tried to call my kids and I couldn't get through. I said, what is going on here? Where am I? And it was kind of frightening. So a couple of the guys were demanding a break. And I always felt like there's no break in this business. There's no holidays. There's no birthdays. There's no time off. There's no none of that. No leave of absence. None of that. It's a 24/7 situation. And we talked about it. And I said to my brothers, I said, we can't take a break here. There's just no breaks in this business. We don't have holidays. We go to work on holidays. But I could understand what they were going through because I had experienced that myself, and it's quite frightening too. And we had so many near plane crashes. We had engines blowing up, and we had situations that got so intense. The stewardess was screaming, "We're gonna die!" You can imagine what that's like.
Oh my!
When the flight attendants start to scream, "We're gonna die! We're gonna die! Well, we're all gonna die!" That's pretty serious. And stuff like that just kind of wore everybody down after a while. We totally enjoyed what we was doing, but we desperately needed to take a break from it. And it, like I said again, it's just no room for breaks in the entertainment business. And you step out for a second, 20 people step right in your place.
That's true.
You can't turn around for one moment. It's going to be because it's very competitive, as you know.
It's a cutthroat business.
And you step out, people step right in your spot.
You mentioned Boston earlier, Willie, and what did you do with the Paul Revere Cup?
Pardon?
What did you do with the Paul Revere Cup?
Well, we later bought a house in Stamford, Connecticut, and when we got ready to take our break, we all came to Los Angeles where our family is here. We never went back. We had we employed some people to put everything in the house in storage, and that's what happened with the Paul Revere Cup.
Wow!
Somewhere in storage, somebody has it. Our gold records, all our plaques, our personal little things got stored away there. In later years, after paying storage for 100 years. One guy after the other stopped contributing to the payments on the storage. I was doing it for myself for a long time, and it got a little bit too much for me, and I just kind of dropped off of it too, and everything was auctioned off or sold or given away or something.
That's kind of sad.
Yeah. We were, I think, the third person to receive the Paul Revere Cup. It wasn't a frequently given out trophy there.
No, it still isn't.
Cherished it. We loved having that, and it sat on right up on the mantle and right above the fireplace in our house. People didn't know what it was, but when they would read the inscriptions there and see the Paul Revere Cup.
Kind of cool.
Got a Paul Revere Cup? Yeah, we did.
Willie, for a guy from native Mississippi, what's it like to be traveling around the world? I know you guys have done Japan, you've done Russia. What's it like to travel around the world, and what kind of response does your music get?
It was the same every place. In some countries where people didn't speak English, there was that one song, People Get Ready. We would sing that song, and women of all age would come to the front of the stage and weep. You know, we don't know they couldn't speak English, but the music has it speaks to everybody in all languages somehow. And it was very rewarding to be able to travel to these many places and to see the response of people just so warm and so receiving us and accepting us for the music that we were playing. And it was educational to travel. It gave you a great appreciation. You developed a great appreciation for home, for the United States of America. You know, it made you appreciate a lot of things that it meant a lot to you, but you didn't notice it. And then you go to some foreign countries and you really realize that, gee, you know, it's a good place to be here. You know, it has, we have our problems here, but they don't even come close to what some other countries may have.
No.
And like, it would be a good thing to send about 10,000 kids to foreign countries every year. You know, the government sponsor these, send them there, let them see, so they can come back and appreciate what they have here.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, it would be good to, because like, people need to know what it's like in other places. You know, different cultures, different rules and regulations that the people have to live by. There's some places you can't go out and buy a car. You got to get permission. You can't buy your kid a car because he or she had good grades and graduated good from high school.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to buy them a car. In some places you can't do that. You got to get permission to buy a home. You know, somebody tells you no, you can't buy one.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't buy one. You know, like those kind of things. Like a lot of people and our country here need to realize that there's great opportunities here and should be better respected.
Right. We're talking with Willie Chambers from the Chambers Brothers, and the CD called Time Has Come Today is available. Actually, the CD is called The Time Has Come. It's a Sony Legacy CD that features People Get Ready and In the Midnight Hour and Time Has Come Today and many of the great songs of the Chambers Brothers. And it's kind of nice that you have this beautiful new CD out, and folks who may have not been that familiarized with the Chambers Brothers or may have only heard one song can now pick up a CD with such great music in it.
I love it. I love it. I got a copy and I opened it up and I saw pictures that had never been released. I said, oh, I remember this. I remember the photo session. I said, oh, this is good. Mm. And they put two or three songs on there that had never been released. And that was a lift.
It's a nice
day. I'm not being, you know, it just sounds good to me. I play it all the time.
Mm.
It's like new to me. It's like new, you know, like it doesn't seem to want to get old.
Talking about getting old, I'm starting to think I'm a little bit old because for me, when I think back of music, I think of the mid-60s, late-60s, and early-70s mm-hmm. as really the best music ever around. And people
yeah.
say, oh, no, Mark, it's still great now. But I don't get some of the stuff that's out nowadays.
You know, right? I kind of feel the same way, too. You know what was happening back then? Everybody was a unique individual. It was originality. People were original. You know, and everybody had a place for themselves. You earned and created a space for yourself. Today, you push a few buttons and you're there, you know. And like,
mm-hmm.
I listen to the radio, I listen to music stations all day. I listen till I can't stand it anymore, and then I'll turn on a station that plays Brock and Beethoven,
mm-hmm.
and I listen to that for a week
mm-hmm.
just to chill out. But I can't identify with anybody or anything. I don't know who people are. There's no originality, and there's nothing in the music that you can say, ah, that's Ray Charles, you know, that's Glenn Campbell, you know, that's Joan Baez, that's Bob Dylan, you know, there's no people like that today, you know.
No, there really isn't, and some of the music, like the rap stuff, and the real heavy metal, I just can't get into it. I just can't.
Man, the airwaves I've always felt like is a very sacred, special place, and I've always, and my brothers, we talk about this stuff all the time, and even to this day, I and my brothers, we feel like the airwaves is a very sacred place, and it should be only used for something positive, something that means something, that's going to help somebody out of a suppression of whatever they're going through.
Mm.
Not for some guy to express his rowdy, his attitude, her suggestion of how they feel about life. You know, it's just not. It shouldn't be a personal place where somebody can get up there and say whatever they want without any respect for God or children or women or life itself. I have heard some stuff that I could not believe. I was shocked to hear that you could say stuff and do stuff like this on the airwaves.
The times have changed, really. You know, my last question, because I know I can let you go. It says that you have psychic ability. and you can sometimes know things before they happen. Do you know who won the presidential election yet? Do you have that feeling?
Do I?
Yeah.
You know, this is a different one. This is a different one, man. I try to go back in my head and find, I can't get with this one. I don't know what it is.
Because I have psychic abilities myself, but I
Are
just keep
you
going whiffling.
at a stalemate too?
Yeah, I waffle both ways. I get this
Mm-hmm.
feeling, oh, I can feel it, and then it changes.
That's right. You
It's
know,
really weird.
I was watching the guys talk and make speeches and debates and all of this, and like, you could pretty much determine who where the strength is. And like at one point, Gore is doing, he's saying the right thing. Then you see him again, and he's light,
Yeah.
very light, no depth. And then Bush comes on, and he's the heavy one, and it's back and forth, like. Sometimes I used to look at Gore, and he just seemed to not be serious enough. He wasn't putting enough emphasis on his words. And Bush would come out there, and he was like, yeah. And then Gore would come back; he would just be too soft. Back and forth, and couldn't nail it down. I still can't.
Yeah, still
I'm just
undecided.
waiting to see. I'm keeping a watch on it to see. It's just the strangest one I've ever experienced.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah.
Willie Chambers from the Chambers Brothers, and still playing some great music. And are you going to be coming in the East Coast at all to play us some music?
Well, we hope so. Right now, I'm just writing songs right now and rehearsing with my band, trying to get ready for the big thing.
Yeah, what's the big thing?
Whatever it is.
Okay. Are you
And
gonna
we're
be
just trying to
doing?
get prepared for, like, well, we have high hopes to cover the planet again.
You gonna do another CD?
Yeah.
Good. I'm looking forward to it. When it comes out, we'll have you on again and we'll play it.
Well, thank you very
All right,
much.
Willie?
All right, baby.
You take care of yourself.
Love you.
Bye bye.
Bye-bye.